Vice President Pence was the head of the coronavirus task force originally. Trump seemed to sort of take it over from him.
President Trump continues his hospital stay for COVID. It's Tuesday, October 6th. This is VOA Asia. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Join us as well online at VOA Asia Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and YouTube. Also ahead, Electoral College controversy and virtual virus containment. It's all on today's VOA Asia. The health watch on President Donald Trump remains the focus of the world after he and several of those in his inner circle, including First Lady Melania Trump, tested positive for the novel coronavirus. A short time ago, his press secretary joined the list of positive COVID results. The president remains at Walter Reed Medical Center just outside Washington. Doctors have given little information other than to say he's doing well and is being given a 5-day regimen of remdesivir, has been administered oxygen, steroids, and antibodies. The president made a brief appearance Sunday riding in a short motorcade outside the hospital to wave to well-wishers gathered along the road. One question is how the president's health status will change the race for the White House just a month before Election Day. It also throws a much brighter light on the vice president and whether or not Mike Pence will have to assume power. It also puts Democratic Senator Kamala Harris into greater prominence, as she would become vice president should she and 77-year-old Joe Biden win the November 3rd election. Pence and Harris are scheduled to face off in their one and only debate Wednesday in Salt Lake City, Utah. For many reasons, that debate may be more interesting and watchable than a typical presidential or vice presidential debate. VOA's Steve Reddish takes a look.
It is considered the political undercard, the vice presidential debate.
I think vice presidential debates often are more interesting to watch. The stakes are lower. The participants feel a little freer to say and do what they want.
Wednesday's debate between Republican Vice President Mike Pence and Democratic Senator Kamala Harris has multiple storylines that make it more interesting and watchable.
The historic nature of Kamala Harris's nomination and the fact that a woman of color, first woman of color on a major party ticket, will be debating.
Geraldine Ferraro was the first woman to participate in a vice presidential debate, facing George Herbert Walker Bush, Ronald Reagan's running mate, in 1984.
So I remember there being tremendous concern about the way Vice President Bush should debate the first female on a presidential ticket. And he could be at times a very competitive man and certainly was a very good debater, knew his material very well, but didn't want to look as though he was bullying her in any way.
In 2008, voters were eager to see Sarah Palin debate Joe Biden.
The expectations for that Biden-Palin vice presidential debate were so great. It's the only time in presidential debate history that the vice presidential debate outdrew, had more viewers than the top of the ticket presidential debates. And those top of the ticket debates were not snoozers because they included Barack Obama in terms of historic debates.
Now, President Trump's COVID diagnosis is increasing already high expectations for the Pence-Harris debate.
Vice President Pence was the head of the coronavirus task force originally. Trump seemed to sort of take it over from him. But certainly the Harris campaign will be going right for Pence on coronavirus concerns and talk about all the things that they think he did to not handle this as well as he could have.
Mary Kate Carey is a senior fellow at the University of Virginia's Miller Center.
She's got a reputation for being a very aggressive questioner in the Senate Judiciary Committee. She's known for sort of laying these traps and trying to bait people to respond. So she will be a very formidable debater, I think. Pence, on the other hand, is a pretty unflappable guy to the point of sometimes not being very animated at all. The chances of him falling into any sort of trap are pretty small. But I also think he's got an audience of one.
His illness aside, President Trump is age 74. Joe Biden is 77. This vice presidential debate has future implications.
If Mike Pence has another good debate in 2020, as he did 4 years ago, then that really helps strengthen his position as the Republican nominee in 2024. And the same with Kamala Harris, who's obviously, you know, young enough to have a long-term ambition here.
But too much focus on 4 years from now risks losing sight of the main debate objective, defend the presidential candidate they are running with.
I think that we'll see Kamala Harris prosecuting why the Trump should not be returned to office, and then Pence having to defend the record for the past 4 years. And so that will be, I think, an interesting debate to watch.
The vice presidential candidates meet Wednesday evening in Salt Lake City, Utah. Steve Reddish, VOA News, Washington.
These are among some of the top Asia headlines you'll find right now on VOAnews.com. New Caledonia votes to remain French. Why U.S. Arms Control Envoy made a beeline for Vietnam on brief Asia trip. Millions of Afghan children out of school. Ghani faces backlash over disputed remarks. Attack kills 8 in Afghanistan as president visits Doha. Uyghur couple, officials article, confirm China's ban on Islamic marriage vow. Expanded coverage of all these stories, and of course so much more, are found daily on Facebook at VOA Asia. Stop by our VOAnews.com website. VOA Asia continues. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. During last Tuesday's raucous presidential debate, President Donald Trump warned he would not go along with an election result based on mail-in ballots he alleges are fraudulent. To prevent the spread of the deadly coronavirus, some states have expanded voting by mail, and polling indicates significantly more Democrats than Republicans are relying on this method to cast their ballots. In addition to the likely possibility Trump will challenge the election results in court if he loses, VOA's Brian Patton reports there are growing concerns his campaign will also try to persuade the Electoral College to overturn the popular vote in states where Democratic candidate Joe Biden is deemed the winner.
At the end of Tuesday's presidential debate, the two major political party candidates were asked if they would refrain from declaring victory until the election results were independently certified. Democratic candidate Joe Biden agreed.
Once the winner is declared after all the ballots are counted, all the votes are counted, that'll be the end of it. That'll be the end of it. And if it's me, in fact, fine. If it's not me, I'll support the outcome.
But President Trump equivocated and repeated unsubstantiated charges of massive fraud from mail-in votes that could undermine the election.
I am 100% on board. But if I see tens of thousands of ballots being manipulated, I can't go along with that.
However, Trump's own FBI director, Christopher Wray, has said there is no evidence of widespread mail-in voter fraud this year. Trailing in the polls, Trump has indicated his campaign will mount legal challenges to contest mail-in ballots if he does not win, challenges that could end up being decided by the Supreme Court. Meantime, the Supreme Court nomination of Judge Amy Coney Barrett to replace the late Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg is being pushed through the Senate by the president and his party. There is also reporting that Trump, citing voter fraud, may ask Republican-led state governments to override the popular vote in the Electoral College if Biden wins. The Trump campaign has denied these reports. In the Electoral College, established over 200 years ago, state legislatures use the outcome of the popular vote to select electors from the victorious party who then cast the official ballots on behalf of the population of their respective states. Overriding the popular vote, analysts say, could greatly undermine public confidence in democracy itself.
And that you could see then enrage many of its citizens who had voted and anticipated that their votes would count.
The Electoral College has become increasingly controversial after declaring George W. Bush the winner of the 2000 presidential election, and then again in 2016, awarding Donald Trump the presidency, even though both lost the national popular vote. While many Democrats now advocate for abolishing the Electoral College, Republicans defend this indirect voting system because it allocates proportionally more electors to rural states.
So that means candidates have to try to appeal to a much broader, wider segment of the American populace rather than just going to the big cities and campaigning there.
This potential new Electoral College controversy over mail-in voting, analysts say, could end up producing no clear winner. In that case, the House of Representatives would be called upon to choose the next president. Brian Patton, VOA News, Washington.
Happening now in Asia, Thailand's army chiefs met for the first time after a reshuffle, while months of pro-democracy demonstrators have demanded the military step away from politics and called for the resignation of Thai Prime Minister and former junta general Prayut Chan-o-cha. Stay up to date with VOA and VOA 60. You're listening to VOA Asia. Thanks for being with us today on VOA Asia. With tens of thousands of new coronavirus cases daily in the United States, states are launching digital apps that alert a person if they've been exposed to someone who tested positive for the virus. Virginia recently rolled out a COVID exposure app that became instantly popular with residents. Health officials are trying to determine whether such apps will work to help slow virus transmission. VOA's Julie Tabo has more.
We've said all along that our primary ways of fighting this virus include testing and contact tracing.
In August, the governor of Virginia delivered some promising news in the fight to contain COVID-19.
Virginia is proud to launch a new digital app called COVIDWISE.
Virginia is the first state in the U.S. to launch an exposure notification smartphone app in partnership with Apple and Google. With close to 500,000 downloads so far, more than 11% of the state's population, health officials here say the COVIDWISE app is a hit. But it's too soon to know how well the app will work to meet its chief goal, slowing the virus's spread in the state.
COVIDWISE protects your privacy.
Part of the app's appeal is that it's voluntary and anonymous, protecting people's privacy, says Jeff Stover, who oversees the project at the Virginia Department of Health.
COVIDWISE is a means of getting information out to people anonymously that they may have been exposed without the risk of, identifying who the individuals were who actually were positive.
There's going to be a lot of factors that interact that will determine, how many people in a community need to be using the app for it to actually be identifying cases that might not have otherwise been identified. And that's the goal.
If a user tests positive for the virus, they can report that result on their COVIDWISE app. Other users will be notified only if the two devices have been within 1.83 meters of each other for at least 15 minutes over the last 14 days. John Benner is one of the many Virginians who has downloaded the app.
When you have an epidemic going through a community, or in this case, the country and the world, the more information you can get, the better. And this just seemed to be a logical use of technology.
Many Virginians agree and have already downloaded the app out of a sense of duty.
This was billed as something you can trust, and I accept it.
But not everyone is so trusting.
The reason I haven't is mostly with privacy concerns.
Jeff Stover says he and his team are working hard to address those concerns.
Privacy and confidentiality is something that we knew we would be confronting from day one. So we have a marketing and PR firm that we hired locally. We're doing our best to reach out to those communities.
While the app is not a silver bullet, Stover says it's one more tool to help contain the virus.
For all the people who are downloading this app, we are averting more infections. We're averting more deaths. We're averting more hospitalizations. We're allowing people to get tested sooner.
Time will tell if it allows people to move about more safely and with greater confidence. Julie Tabo, VOA News.
That's our program for today. We thank you for joining us for VOA Asia. Continue online at Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and YouTube, all under the name VOA Asia. We'd also like to thank our managing editor, Diane Gao, and our VOA Asia team, Ira Melman, Doug Bernard, and Keith Lane. I'm Jim Stevenson. We're in Washington. We hope you have a great day ahead. Be safe. Be well.